Josh D'Amigo was hanging out in his house in Oxnard, California last year when a friend contacted him to say that Josh's brother Nathan was all over Twitter. What Josh found out when he logged onto the social media channel floored him. His brother was one of the white supremacists involved in an altercation with Antifa protesters in a park in Berkeley. Not only that, Josh discovered that Nathan had founded a white supremacist group. The ensuing conflicts between Josh, Nathan, and their family are chronicled in an article published recently in Pacific Standard magazine. Josh D'Amigo and Gabriel Thompson join us this morning here on the Jefferson Exchange. Gabriel, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And Josh, are you there with us as well?
Yes. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Josh. Thanks for joining us today on talking about a very, very difficult subject. Josh, let's start with you. Your brother Nathan's involvement with white supremacists caught you totally by surprise. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you found out about all this?
Well, it's been a developing thing that Nathan had been getting into. He had been accused of a crime that he committed back in 2007. And in San Diego, we were living together. And when he was serving prison time, he got indoctrinated in white supremacy. And, you know, honestly, it kind of just progressed from there. So it wasn't like it was like overnight, all of a sudden I found out that my brother was a white supremacist. But it was something that out of nowhere, he became a popular white supremacist. And that was when everything changed for me.
So when you logged on to Twitter and you saw there were actual videos of the fracas in Berkeley, what went through your head when you saw your brother?
We were raised, Baptist, Christian, and one of the things that we always have said, if it looks like a duck or it sounds like a duck, it's probably a duck. And honestly, I was just floored that he was there in the first place and felt like he shouldn't have been there at all, and that would have stopped a lot of the problems as far as that goes.
And Gabriel, let's bring you into the conversation here. How did you come onto this story? Were you already covering white supremacist activities, or were you aware of Nathan through covering the alt-right?
It's not like a beat that I've worked for years and years, but after Trump's election and after he became president, I was working on a piece about California and about California's deep and long and real history of racism and racist activism, partly because California was being, portrayed and highlighted as the anti-Trump state. But it's a big, complicated state with a history that's not always very pretty. So for part of that piece that I was working on, I came across Nathan's name. At that point, this is before the incident in Berkeley in which he, that really blew him up, in which he was videotaped punching a woman in the face. So I reached out to him before all that. At that point, he was a college student in the Central Valley. He had founded this group called Identity Europa, really focused on trying to reach out to other young college students and build this organization, but do it in a cleaner way with not the same racist jargon that might turn people off. And so I interviewed him back, I believe it was like maybe in December 2016. And somehow in that reporting, I learned that he had a brother, but that was just something that went into my head and stuck there, but I didn't do anything about that. And then when he blew up on the internet and he became this folk hero among a certain section of the alt-right for the violence in Berkeley, it just sort of got me thinking, I'm from Cupertino in San Jose, which is where Nathan's from. I went to a school that was pretty diverse. He went to a school that was very diverse. And so it just got me thinking, like, what happened to get to that point? What were the, and it's, when I reached out to Josh and Josh was open to chatting, it really, he was the person that was able to kind of walk me through, from his perspective, the different phases, I guess. And I should say at the end, I think one of the other things I was trying to push back against a little bit in this piece is that there aren't super clean, easy answers. As you learn as much as you can about something, it's always, the transformation of someone from seems like a normal guy to a leader of a white nationalist organization. It's really messy, and it's not always clear exactly which things push folks in which directions.
So, Gabriel, can you identify a little bit more about, or describe a little bit more about Identity Europa? So they spell Europa with a V instead of the U.
I have no idea.
Can you place it in kind of the larger picture of the alt-right?
Yeah. They spell with a V for, no particular reason, I don't think, except that it probably because it looks cool. Nathan was in prison when he got out of, and when he was in prison, he was an Iraq vet who came back with PTSD, and that's very clearly linked to the crime that he committed. But when he was in prison, he gets turned on to David Duke and sort of this all this literature that he hasn't read before. And he comes out and works out of prison. He starts working for another group called the National Youth Front, I believe. Not super high profile, kind of shouting into the wilderness of the internet, not many people listening. But he becomes convinced, Nathan does, that what they need is to create a much more media savvy, much more, nice graphics, good messaging, clean cut image of an organization that moves from the internet and to the real world. So I think Identity Europa, what it's been successful at doing more than most groups is actually engaging folks in real life on college campuses most of the time. They have a lot of flyering campaigns and they drop banners from highways. But they also, during the period that I was reporting on them, focus on trying to create a sense of community among these students. So they go out and they'll like walk a beach and clean up litter from the beach, or they'll go compete in like mud runs, like triathlon type things. So there was a real sense, a desire, I think, purposeful to create a sense of community out of these folks in the alt-right that are often only linked via, Reddits or some websites and email exchanges to take all that and move it into the real world.
So, Josh, Gabriel mentioned your brother's military service, his prison term. So his military service is a big part of his life. He did multiple tours in Iraq, and he comes back. He starts exhibiting symptoms of PTSD. Can you tell us, walk us through how his life kind of unraveled after that?
Yeah, he'd gotten back from, his tour, and he and I moved in together in an apartment in San Diego. He had these different things that were just off. It's San Diego. I feel pretty safe. I love that city. And he felt the need to have a bat next to the door in case somebody broke in. Little things like that where he was just uneasy at times. I'm a full-time musician, and I was on tour. And that's when everything kind of went down. One night he got really drunk, went out and committed a crime. From there, he went to prison thinking, hey, I'm just going to plead guilty. It's all over. And the roller coaster of, for-profit prisons and moving out of state and just the handling of his case by the district attorney in San Diego really took a situation from bad to worse. I believe that what he really needed was help with his PTSD, and had he been able to receive that help in 2007, I believe we wouldn't be in the situation we are today.
So while he was, I'm going to just throw this question out to both of you. So while Nathan was in prison, Gabriel already mentioned that he encountered a book by David Duke, but he also joined a white prison gang, probably like a lot of people in prison, just to survive the experience. And, are those are the sorts of things that led him to embrace the white supremacist beliefs, or Do you think it was something else?
Absolutely. I think that it's very obvious that that was kind of what led him to that. I begged him multiple times to read books, not just by one author on one side, but to look at the situation from both sides, hoping that that would help. But when you get a, 10-minute phone call, you don't have the influence of someone that's in his face, in his cell even, 24/7, 365.
And Gabriel, are you aware of other alt-right members who followed a similar trajectory where they go into prison, they become part of a gang, for example, the Aryan Brotherhood, and they come out with, essentially radicalized white supremacist views?
Not just like Nathan, but I think that's I don't think that's incredibly uncommon. I mean, prison damages everyone in different ways, and so I think for Nathan, based on the interviews he's done, he chose not to speak to me for the piece that I did, but he's talked about that time in prison. I think for him, it was a number of things. He was raised, as Josh was, in a very religious family. He was feeling like his religious convictions were not as strong. He was very patriotic and had, volunteered to go into the Marines and done two tours. And with that, I think, was the idea that the United States was a force of good. And in Iraq, I don't think he came away feeling that war was that made sense. And so I think that time in prison was losing faith in his Christianity, maybe a bit losing faith in the notion that of the U.S. as a pure force for good, that what he had sacrificed for meant anything, and that he had time to sit with his thoughts and read and try to make sense of, try to find a new way to orient his life and the prison in particular. So he was, just to make it so that the listeners have an idea of why he was in prison. He was in San Diego drunk, as Josh said, and he, as he described it, a cab drove up an intersection. Nathan flashed back to being at a vehicle checkpoint in Iraq, pulls a gun on this cab driver, robs him of $43, and is picked up quickly thereafter. So that's the crime that puts him in prison. But he is then shipped from California to a private prison in Oklahoma due to California's overcrowded prisons. And that prison in particular was very, very segregated by race. Sometimes they would be on lockdown because there'd be fights between the different races in the prison. So it wasn't a strange place, I think, in which you might start thinking, hey, it's important to separate everyone by race, that we are so different that we no longer can exist peacefully.
It's the Jefferson Exchange here on Jefferson Public Radio, and we're talking to journalist Gabriel Thompson and singer-songwriter Josh D'Amigo about Josh's brother Nathan, who is a major figure in the white supremacist movement. You can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760 or by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Josh, you're a singer-songwriter, a teacher. You and Nathan both grew up with a very strong Christian religious background, but you ended up with more tolerant views than your brother. So at some point, you decided that this was a family issue, and you approached your parents to express your concerns about your brother. What happened next?
It's difficult because my family does feel like this is a family issue. They don't like me talking much with the media. They definitely didn't like Gabriel's article, even though I think it's fantastic and all of your listeners should read it. They really feel like Nathan is a wounded veteran that needs help. And should they abandon him because of some views, they would be doing him a disservice. And the only way that they can help him out is to support him. And he was living with them for a time. Really, they are doing the best they can to balance the family relationship and keep his views his views and not their own. It had to be much more difficult for them because they were living with him, as opposed to me, who can, you know, kind of look from a different vantage point. So I would say that the family has tried their best to support Nathan and do what they thought was the best to help him with his views.
So you don't feel like they at least according to the article, they sort of mildly defended Nathan to you, but you don't feel that that was coming from a place of them kind of at least harboring some views similar to his. It was more just, we want to contain this within the family. We want to help both our sons.
It's interesting. I don't believe that they have the same views as him. There are things that he says, just like any, politician or anyone that says anything, that you could say, oh, that's admirable. I mean, Gabriel just talked about the fact that they were doing beach cleanups. They were doing, from the surface, it can look like it's a really good, wholesome organization. But once you start to peel back the layers of the onion, that's when you start to realize, oh, the views of race is really what sets it apart. At this point, Nathan has, kind of said, oh, this is just politics. It's not just politics. It's absolutely, hey, whites are better than other races. And that, I find, is so absolutely disgusting. That's why I am so vehemently against it. But I do think that they were doing the best they could, just like any parents would try to do the best they could for their kids to put them in the best situation. So when he hopefully stopped having these views, he would know that his family was still supporting him and loved him.
So, Josh, what is Nathan doing right now? I mean, today, is he still very publicly a white nationalist? Is he still leading this organization?
He is not. I'm not sure what he's doing, honestly. He and I have been estranged since about 2016, and we haven't discussed much. He moved out. He doesn't live with the family anymore, but I don't have a relationship with him.
But you still have maintained a relationship with your parents?
Yes, I have. They do tell me things, but there are some people who, hearing about what Nathan's doing, it may not be safe for everybody, so I'd rather not tell you everything he's doing right now.
I understand. So, Josh, I mean, this obviously has been a very difficult process for you, especially within your family, and one of the ways clearly you're dealing with it is by talking with people publicly. But how otherwise are you taking care of yourself through this difficult part of your life?
Well, it's hard. I really started having a difficult time with music, and kind of Gabriel tell you escaped that by getting a full-time job, doing other things to try to get my mind off of it. It's one thing when you're successful and people Google your name. You know, Josh D'Amigo is a pretty odd name, but once you start Googling it and you start seeing my brother's stuff, it kind of ruins any chance that I have of people, differentiating his story from mine. It becomes one story, and that's not what I wanted my career or music to be about. To be honest with you, I've tried my best to be the opposite. I've gotten more involved in local politics here in Oxnard Ventura. I have done a lot more with the chamber, helped out with volunteering, and I guess part of my goal is for every bad view that my brother is spreading, I'm hoping to spread a good view to someone else. So I guess in a way it motivated me to get more involved in my community and to do more for what was right in how I view the world.
Gabriel, as a journalist, can you place this very personal story in a larger context for us? I mean, I'm reminded of, one of the cliches that you hear growing up about the American Civil War, that it pitted brother against brother. But I've also heard radical right-wing rhetoric that says we are indeed headed for another civil war. Can it really get that bad?
I hope not. I think it's important to also just trace what happened to Nathan. So Nathan was he was rising very quickly. He was one of the main organizers, among many, but critical of the Charlottesville rally that turned deadly last August. The day after that rally, he was did a press conference with Richard Spencer, in which he basically said they were winning, their side was winning, there was no way they were turning back. This was a huge victory for everyone. And then, of course, all of these groups imploded, including a few days later, Nathan resigned from Identity Europa. Since then, they've gone through another, someone else took over the reins, and then he left. And he kind of retreated from public view, as Josh mentioned. So I think, if anything, this ascent post-Charlottesville, the ascent of the alt-right and Charlottesville really kind of imploded that, and I think they're much more fractured and much less organized. Doesn't mean they're not a threat, but that I think once people saw these notion of these clean-cut groups, suddenly they're marching, yelling things like "Jews will not replace us." It becomes very clear what their motivating principle is, and I just don't think there's that many people. They're not finding the same kind of recruits.
And we just have a little bit of time left. I wanted to put our last question to Josh. Josh, what's your deepest wish for your brother?
I guess that he learns that this isn't appropriate behavior and that, his views are flawed. I would hope that I believe that there will be consequences to what he did and what he's done, that he's going to have to live with the rest of his life. My hope is that he will somehow be able to rise above it and eventually be a voice against the groups that he was with. I love reading stories about white supremacists that realize the error in their ways, and I'm really hoping that one day that would be his story as well.
Josh D'Amigo, who is the subject of Gabriel Thompson's article about his brother Nathan and discovering he was a white supremacist. Thank you, Josh, for joining us. And thank you also, Gabriel. We really appreciate you spending some time with us today on the Jefferson Exchange. You can find their article on psmag.com or .org, Gabriel?
I don't know. It's one or the other.
Okay. It's Pacific Standard Magazine. We will link to it from our website as well as our Facebook page. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.